Willa, every time you open your mouth, you make me want to send you to the Silent Sisters.
Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we thought it best to rename and rebrand ourselves freshly just in time for the game to do the same with its second edition. Tune in each episode for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. A huge thank you goes out to George R.R. Martin, Fantasy Flight Games, Card Game DB, and you, our loyal and new listeners. Check us out at www.whitebookpodcast.com and contact us on Facebook and Twitter, or email us at contact@whitebookpodcast.com. This CC licensed music is Townfish by Spinozar.
There you have it, folks. Everyone else has been sent to the Silent Sisters. Yes, that's right. This edition of the White Book is yet another solo shot. At this point, I'm about to think that's how the show rolls. I don't know. We'll see. If you're interested in being a potential co-host or an emergency sub at the very least, please drop me a line over at contact@whitebookpodcast.com. Aside from that, this week you once again hear the sultry tones of myself, Will, generally known as Kennan, and this week we're going to continue with our breakdown of factions from the Game of Thrones Second Edition core set. I would love to have knocked out multiple pieces of things in a week, as fans had suggested, but a lack of co-hosts has me wary of jumping through too much. On the other hand, I definitely wanted to keep things moving some, or we'll never get through it at all. Plus, hey, I really like to make sure that there is indeed an episode on Friday, if at all possible. So, this week, Tyrell. As many of you listeners know, though there may be some new ones, we're going to grade the cards similar to the American grading system for schools. That's going to be A through F with no letter E. So that is going to demonstrate A's as great, auto includes that need to be in every deck, and really change the game whenever they appear. B's are still quite good, but maybe need some other cards to really pull the pieces together, or have an obvious vulnerability or drawback. C's are perfectly average and acceptable, if not exciting. D's are niche at best, and F should not be played at all. That does bring us to an interesting discussion brought up in the comments of the prior episode, though, in regards, in that case, to the neutral income locations, Rose Road and the King's Road, and rating for them, which had been a C and a B, respectively, I believe. But the argument was presented that, by definition, they should be A's. And I think I personally, in my rating, would say that I'm tempering it with a couple things. One being that they do need other cards to go with them just on the board. They don't do anything by themselves. They're not participating in challenges. They're not removing opponents' cards from the board. They're not doing anything except for that resource production. As well, they just don't do... what they do doesn't hold up the same way. If we're looking at, say, the first edition core set, and you look at the, I don't know, an income location in there, say, Street of Steel or something, it held up pretty well throughout the life of the game for a variety of factors. It's hard to tell if these will hold up the same way. I may be underrating a little bit, but they really still don't hit that excitement factor, even in the current scheme of things. They don't have that that just slam it on the table, windmill, and you know, now the game is yours feel that other A cards would have, say Mira in first edition. Again, maybe she doesn't win the game on herself, but she's a big swing, she's a fulcrum. I don't feel that the income cards really are. On the other hand, it's hard to rate them poorly because they are necessary. A necessary evil? Who knows? That's hard to say. But I think they're probably good for the game overall. It makes rating them kind of difficult, which is probably why another suggestion that maybe the resource cards should be left out of that rating scale entirely may actually be the best way to have gone about things. I'd be curious to hear more if people have further thoughts. Aside from that, though, we have the Tyrells, who actually are a bit of a resource-oriented faction, though less so than the Lannisters. This time, the order I do the cards in is going to be a little bit out of order due to some computer difficulties. I'm using a new and different computer than what I had been in the past, so I don't have my nice and easily ordered files from before, so I'm going off of web, off of the website. So first up at the moment, that actually looks like it lists us with Heartsbane here on this list. A little unusual to see at first, but this is the unique weapon attachment for Tyrell. It's 1 gold, Valyrian steel, and a weapon. Goes on a Tyrell character only, and action, while attached characters participating in the challenge, kneel Heartsbane to give that character +3 strength until the end of the challenge. This, I think, is a solid attachment. Being able to play them on setup now means that a solid strength boost card like this, at one cost, I feel like has a home in at least one copy. And we know that Tyrell has other cards that key off of these strength boosts. The obvious companion here is Randall Tarly, whose sword this is in the lore, and being able to kneel Heartsbane to stand him up in order to go ahead and get an extra challenge out of him is going to be great. Plus, of course, let's not forget the fact that you're getting that strength boost, which helps you win that challenge if you were not going to otherwise. There's a handful of other things, like, say, put to the sword or torch. Any of these win by a certain amount. Looks like that amount is 5 in second edition, are going to be much easier to trigger when you can get a 3 strength boost all in one chunk like this. This is actually one of my very favorite of the unique weapon attachments. It's still an attachment, which still runs into some difficulties. You have to have the character to put it on to make it relevant. You may lean towards putting this on certain ones to get better use. The character dies, it comes back into hand, maybe now you're hitting reserve. It's better than it was in first edition, but I think I'm still probably giving this about a B-. But as Tyrell gets more effects where something good happens when the character gets boosted in strength, I think Heartsbane is definitely going to go up. Next up on this spoiler, we have Courtesan of the Rose. This is a non-unique, 2-cost, intrigue and power icon with 2 strength. She has the companion and spy traits, and that's it. Now, I don't know offhand if those traits are going to stay neutral as they are. I would hazard a guess that possibly spy might have some negative connotations in the future, but I could see positive as well. As is, though, she's essentially vanilla, and yet is still one of my favorite cards in the core set. She just rounds things out so well, and she has that all-important intrigue icon that I feel like is light on a lot of the cards that people are really looking at playing. It's hard to say much more about her other than she is easily sacrificable for Claim Soak. You don't mind losing her. She's good on setup and just rounds things out beautifully. She not being loyal is one of the key things I would consider when picking Tyrell possibly as a banner house. What's her rating overall? Probably just a C+, but I personally like her. Next up, Garden Caretaker. This is a non-unique, non-loyal, one-cost, power icon, one-strength character. It has the ally trait. It's got the marshaling action. Kneel Garden Caretaker to reduce the cost of the next Tyrell character you marshal this phase by one, which is the standard reducer text. This is a great card, just like any of the others. I think the character-based income is going to be a little easier for me to rate higher than the location-based income, because it can still participate in a challenge. It is able to be killed for military claim if you need. It's not limited in this case, so it's going to be better for setup. The Garden Caretaker here, I'm feeling, is probably a solid B for him. Next up, we have Left. This is a non-loyal, unique, two-cost military icon, two-strength, the guard trait. Can have no attachments except weapon, and while you control right, left gains +1 strength. Gains a power icon, and does not kneel when declared as a defender. Now, this is one that we probably ought to go ahead and discuss in connection with his cohort, his twin brother, from the lore. And right has almost the same text. Two cost, two strength military icon, no attachments except weapon. But while you control left, right gets +1 strength and gains an intrigue icon, and does not kneel when declared as a defender. These are tricky cards for me to rate, I think. They only really feel worthwhile. Well, I shouldn't say always, or only, rather. They seem worthwhile as like one-shot uniques, two costs, you know, only the one in the deck, could be claimed, so could trigger an effect you need a unique for or something. And okay, but I only ever run the one, I let him die, it's fine. On the other hand, to get their abilities activated, you need multiples of them in the deck to reliably draw them, have them in play. Which plays counterpoint, I think, to the rest of the feel that I get from them as kind of, you know, disposable chud. So at what point are they really worthwhile to go ahead, have multiples in the deck, plan around getting both of them, and having a character that's really, even in second ed, probably subpar until you have the brother in play? This is kind of tricky, because I do see that potential upside, but I'm not really in favor of them overall. So I'm leaning towards giving left and right about a D+ each on their own. I think you probably have better options elsewhere. Next up, Maester Lomas. Now, this is a unique non-loyal, 3-cost intrigue icon, 3-strength character. Is the Maester trait and the reaction. After you win an intrigue challenge as the defending player, discard one card at random from the attacking player's hand. I like this guy quite a bit. I think if any house is going to be able to win as a surprise on defense, it's probably most likely to be Tyrell at the moment. That may change. Night's Watch may fight them for that particular title, but it feels like most of the Night's Watch's defensive capabilities are on the board at the moment and are visible. Strength pumps out of Tyrell, on the other hand, some are, some are not. So I think you stand a decent chance of being able to go ahead and trigger that. Plus, if nothing else, while you have him on the board, your opponent probably is not going to bother to try and throw an intrigue challenge as a chump attack at you to just try and kneel out your characters or force something through unopposed. That extra discard is going to be great. Overall, Lomas, I think, is at a solid cost to strength to effect ratio. Just the one icon kind of stinks, but overall, I'm sure Maester is going to be a positive trait. I think Maester Lomas is probably a solid B-worthy card. Next up, Marjorie Tyrell. Now, this is some gorgeous art, I just want to say. It's a repeat of CCG art that I really loved, and I'm super excited to see it back again. And it just looks gorgeous, the new card frames and everything. But she's a three-cost unique. She's also not loyal, with an intrigue and a power icon and three strength. She's a lady and has the challenges action, Neil Marjorie Tyrell, to choose a character. Until the end of the phase, that character gets plus three strength. This is just fantastic. This is one of my favorite cards out of Tyrell. She looks like a first edition card. That I think is a card I would play in first edition. We've already seen the Clansman in first ed, two for two that pump by two, or four if you have less cards in hand. But like that same pump equal to cost and strength is a very effective ability. She has two icons of her own. I know Lady's going to wind up being some level of positive later on down the line. She's not loyal either, so she's a prime candidate for Banner. And she doesn't have to pump just Tyrells, making it even better. Marjorie is great. She's not quite just an absolute bomb take over the game for you, but she does a lot with no real appreciable downside, especially at that cost point. So I think I'm probably giving her an A-. Next up, Olenna's Informant. Now, she is a three-cost intrigue and power character with two strengths. She's non-unique and non-loyal, I should have said. She's an ally and a spy. She has ambush 4 and reaction. After Olenna's Informant enters play during the challenges phase, name a challenge type. You may initiate an additional challenge of that type this phase. I gotta say, I love Olenna's Informant as well. That ambush cost is indeed expensive, but there are houses that I think are really going to love this. Of course, Lannister loves ambush, and something like Tyrion can power you into the gold that you need to pay for that ambush cost. As well, much like Tyrell, they like those intrigue challenges pretty well and can probably take advantage of making yet another intrigue challenge. In fact, in Lannister, when you may be able to draw cards off of those multiple intrigue challenges, I like this even better. And, of course, you know, discarding from the opponent's hand. But as well, houses with some level of stand may very well like the ability to initiate some extra challenges. Stark has some ways to potentially play around with those shenanigans, particularly with Robb. Tyrell in-house has Randall Tarly. I think this is going to be a very useful card to come. And so with that expensive cost, I think it pulls her down a hair. She's probably about a B, I would say. Then we have Paxter Redwyne. He is a loyal unique character, 4 cost, intrigue, and 3 strength. He has House Redwyne and Lord traits, and says reduce the gold cost of the first event you play each round by 1, and he also just has a plain old printed +1 gold. I like him pretty well. He's not phenomenal stat-wise for the cost, at least as far as strength and icons go, but he does provide a nice income boost there. The flat +1 is going to be solid. And he's providing that without the limited keyword, which is definitely good. Plus, if you're using any type of events, that extra boost is going to be great. The ability to just go ahead and knock 1-cost events down to be free is going to be pretty big. It seems like the 0-cost events are really at a premium here because they give that real surprise factor that used to be available in first edition. Not that it isn't in second, but you do definitely telegraph things more depending on how much gold you keep around, how much you're trying to bluff that maybe you are keeping because you have a put to the sword. However it may be, Paxter Redwyne makes that much, much more flexible for you. I wish he had a second icon, but I still like him pretty well. I'm feeling about a B+ for Paxter Redwyne. All right, that sends us to Randall Tarly. He is a non-loyal 6-cost unique with military and power icons and 5 strength. He has the House Tarly and Lord traits and renown. And the reaction after Randall Tarly's strength is increased by a guard effect, stand in. Limit twice per phase. Well, first off, I want to say it's great, I think, that FFG is going ahead and putting limits in place on this type of standing effect right from the get-go. I think we definitely saw in first edition that unmitigated stand was most likely to cause, let's say, broken problems with the game. Now, he's not loyal, so he's going to be a great boon, I think, to banner decks here. He's at what seems to be a pretty solid cost point for second edition as far as stats, renown, and such. The 5 and 6 cost slots, I think, seem to be more of a sweet spot in second edition than some of the others. Unfortunately, to really get use out of his ability, you are mainly tied into just using the other Tyrell effects to actually give him that strength boost and get multiple challenges out of him. So he's probably overall definitely better in a primary Tyrell deck, but with a little neutral boost would look better on the outside as well. Overall, I think I'm probably willing to give him a solid B right in the middle there. He definitely has some things that work with him well. Next up, the Knight of Flowers. Now, this is not loyal again, though he is unique. This is 5 cost. That is military and power icon, 5 strength, knight and lord, and renown. While the Knight of Flowers is attacking alone, the defending player cannot declare more than one character as a defender. This is essentially the ability of the Joust keyword from the first edition of the LCG, which was, I think, a fairly strong keyword. 3 strength at the time was kind of the sweet spot to have stealth, or sorry, Joust, and to pretty well ensure that you were going to win the challenge because your opponent was probably topping out at that same strength point on a single character. And of course, attackers winning ties. Knight of Flowers here at 5 in 2nd edition, I think, is probably right at that same strength point, just looking at some of the other characters I can see at the moment. Which means that he's really pretty awesome in that he's almost an auto win for a single challenge just for 5 gold. Add in the renown keyword on top of that, and I think he is a strong contender for one of Tyrell's best cards. He's probably, I think I'm willing to give this Knight of Flowers an A at the moment, though of course he is going to be vulnerable to Tears of Lys as always. Still, drop a little bird on him and have the potential to auto-win that intrigue as well. Next up, we have the Haas, the Queen of Thorns. Now, we got to talk about her as a preview card before, so I don't know how much of that I'm going to rehash. Astute listeners may hear some of the same things, but basically, I love her. She's 7 cost, loyal, unique character. She has intrigue and power icons and 5 strength. She's a lady. And reaction, after you win an intrigue challenge in which the Queen of Thorns is participating, put a Tyrell character with printing cost 6 or lower into play from your hand, which is huge, huge from a resource perspective, as long as you can win that challenge. Now, there are some things that could happen to the Queen of Thorns. She might get knelt by Melisandre, for instance. There's the chance a couple effects might be combined out of Targ to kill her. Maybe she's hit with a put to the sword, but you know what? She's not going to be hit by Tears of Lys, at least. Well, okay, so it could be Milk of the Poppy as well. And Milk of the Poppy is probably the most popular character control card that I'm seeing at the moment, which stinks. But if you get even one use out of her, she's dropping a card out of your hand to keep you away from your reserve, and she's effectively saying plus 6 gold every time you trigger her. Even if you're only able to trigger her once, that's huge. That's a much faster return on investment than another 7 cost character like, say, Tywin. She even has a reasonable amount of strength to win challenges on her own if need be. And Tyrells, of course, with being the pump faction, could probably just attack with her and still manage to win the challenge against some defenders due to those pump capabilities. The Queen of Thorns, I think, is one of those bomb cards that is going to change the game, is going to see tons and tons of play in Tyrell for the foreseeable future, and I think is really, really what I had in mind for the definition of an A card in second edition. Now, after that, we are sent to the somewhat less exciting Wardens of the Reach. It's a non-unique, non-loyal card. 4 cost, military and power icons, 3 strength, it's an army, and it has no attachments. It also says Wardens of the Reach gets +1 strength for each The Reach location that you control. This seems solid, I think. At the moment, the Tyrells have 3 Reach locations, one of which is non-unique that you may well be running multiple copies of. So I think there's a good chance that this is at least a 4-for-4 in most games, which is probably a really solid, it is at least matching the conventions of what I would want to expect out of a character, and that it has the potential for a slightly higher upside I like. I'm not so certain about the fact that it is not loyal. I don't think that really brings much to the table here, at least at the moment, where the only Reach location that is not loyal is the Reducer, the Rose Garden. And in general, as the game goes, I expect the Wardens to still heavily favor just being played in faction anyway. Overall, I think it's a solid but not terribly exciting card, which probably makes it a C. Next, we get to move on to the events. We have the Bear and the Maiden Fair. This is a 0-cost, non-loyal event. It has the Song trait and the action. Choose a player. Look at the top 5 cards of that player's deck. Place up to 3 of those cards on the bottom of that deck and the others on top, in any order. Now, when I first saw this, I was really unenthused about it. But I think as things have kind of gone in second edition, it's been proven that there have been enough tweaks to the metagame from first edition that the stock of Bear and the Maiden Fair has gone up by a lot. Number one, it's a free event, which means you're not telegraphing when you may play it, which is huge. It also gives you the capability to play it right before your opponent's draw phase, even if you drew this earlier, say in the challenge phase of the prior turn. As well, it's an action, so it gives you the capability to play that in the other odd phases rather than specifically challenges or something. You get to choose any player, which means you can dig deeper into your own deck to desperately find your own bomb or your own answer card. Or I think what is probably, as the life of the game goes on, the less effective option, but currently fairly strong at the moment, you can go ahead and use it to bury something of your opponent's. Now, that one gets a little iffier because who knows if what you're burying is for sure better than what they might draw, but you can make a few reasonable guesses at the moment about dropping their character control to the bottom of the deck, say a Milk of the Poppy, or I think what is probably a stronger option in the state of second edition, maybe actually burying their resources if you see any, which is going to give you a lasting edge in the game if you've managed to draw any of your own. The Bear and the Maiden Fair overall, then, in light of things, I'm probably going to say is about a B minus at the moment, maybe a solid B. Though I do hear that Sean over in Tulsa rates it a pretty hard A. Next, we have Growing Strong. It is another non-loyal event. This one is 1 cost. It has the challenges action, choose up to 3 Tyrell characters. Until the end of the phase, each of the chosen characters gets +2 strength. This one is definitely better compared to, say, another pump event that we saw out of Stark. Being able to pump 3 characters for the entirety of the phase is going to be very strong, potentially stands Randall Tarly, potentially makes it easier to win with the Knight of Flowers or Queen of Thorns, or maybe some combination of the above. Overall, I think it's pretty decent depending on what other effects you have on the board. It definitely, I think, has stock that goes up if you're trying to leverage two claim or possibly even multiple challenges with Elena's Informant, meaning you could potentially commit less total characters to the challenge if their strength is higher, thus have extras to commit to the next challenge. But I think overall, since it doesn't actually itself affect any sort of card advantage, that I'm not hugely in favor of it overall. I think I'm fairly likely to cut it in favor of some other events. So this is probably about a C minus for me. Next we have Elena's Cunning. This is a loyal event, 2 cost, and reaction. After you win an intrigue or power challenge, the losing opponent names a card type, character, location, attachment, or event. Search your deck for a card with a different card type, reveal it, and add it to your hand. Shuffle your deck. This is huge. A lot of great abilities to search for whatever you might need in a situation. If your opponent has a firm handle on the game, they can probably stop you from getting your primary idea, but leaves you wide open for a secondary. Of course, the dream play is using this after you win an intrigue with Queen of Thorns. Now, a smart opponent is not going to let you actually search for a character when you can just grab someone, then trigger the Queen of Thorns reaction to drop them straight into play, but it would be living in the dream. Of course, on the other hand, if they see the Queen of Thorns and don't name character, now you're free to search for an event, which means that Tears of Lys is going to be really handy, if you've got the extra gold left. Oh, or Paxter Redwyn. I think this does a lot of great things. And even if you don't have the Queen of Thorns available and search for a character, you can drop the Informant in or anything else that might have ambush. Can even grab out of faction stuff if you have someone else bannered to you. I think this is very versatile and is an event that I am probably willing to go ahead and sit on 2 gold to be able to use, or 1 with Paxter. Oh, so I guess that tears business won't work if you've already played Elena's Cunning. Shucks. Oh well, doesn't ding the rating of the card for me. I think Elena's Cunning is probably a solid A- for me. Moving on to the locations, we have High Garden. This is a 3-cost unique location. It is loyal. The traits are Stronghold and Reach. And as the challenge's action, kneel High Garden and pay 1 gold to choose an attacking character. Stand that character and remove it from the challenge. This is a very, very solid location, I think. It's a great repeatable control option, and one of the very bare handful of repeatable ones that we've seen in second edition. So I feel this is right up there with Melisandre and the Plaza. It's going to be very strong to stop incoming challenges. Now, unfortunately, it stands that character, meaning it can still be used on defense against you, but hopefully the Tyrell strength bumps can still put you up and over the top when you're on offense. Or, as well, it lets you feint with a low-cost character, say a Courtesan of the Rose, wait till they defend something much larger to defend against it, because, of course, they're worried about Tyrell pumps, and then you just pay 1 gold and go ahead and pull them out of the challenge and use them elsewhere. I think this is a very versatile card, and probably going to be a staple of any Tyrell decks that want to attempt some control. And so this is probably an A-minus card for me, I think. That sends us to the Rose Garden. This is one of those difficult-to-rate income cards. It's a 0-cost, non-loyal location. It has the Reach trait. It's limited, and marshaling action, kneel Rose Garden to reduce the cost of the next Tyrell card you marshal this phase by 1. If push came to shove, I'm probably just going to give these C's at the moment. But I do, as I said earlier in the episode, like that idea that maybe we should just leave these types of income cards out of that rating scheme entirely. Then we have the Mander, the final Tyrell card. This is 3 cost. It's a unique location, and it is loyal. It has the reach trait and the reaction. After you win a challenge by 5 or more strength, deal the Mander to draw 2 cards. I think this is a great draw location. I have a hard time deciding which of the various ones is my favorite. I love that the Mander can trigger off of any challenge, which gives you some flexibility to juke and feint at your opponent to try and get a later challenge through after you've knelt some of their stuff as defenders, or killed them for military claim. There's some options here, and of course it ties in beautifully with the Tyrell pumps and is one of the strongest reasons to utilize those pumps, I think. Getting 2 cards out of the 1 actual challenge that you won with it is great. So you get to that upside, I think, a little easier. Hit it a little higher than something else, like, say, Lannisters. So I really dig it. The Mander, though, is 3 cost, but I think it's definitely going to pay itself back in dividends off of those cards. So I feel like the Mander is probably an A- for me as well. So there you have it, folks. That's Tyrell. I don't know if you listeners could tell or not, but doggone it, I like the Tyrell cards quite a bit. Turns out I'm pretty happy with what they got. I've been waiting for them to be playable in the game for quite a while now, and I don't think they disappointed me at all. They have a few interesting mechanics here. I don't know how distinct they really feel yet out of just the core set, but we'll see how the game goes after that. All right, props and slops. Well, this week I think is going to be a bit of a tricky one for me. I did actually start watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer on Netflix with Kristen. So, Dodd, if you're listening, I know you've been begging me to watch it for roughly 2 years now. So it's pretty 90s, but it does also have Allison Hannigan. So I think I'm probably going to enjoy this overall. Aside from that, I haven't really delved in too much to various bits and pieces of pop culture and the like. Want to go ahead, though, throw out a bit of a request, much like at the beginning of the show. If you want to help with the White Book podcast, show, or site at all, shoot me a line at contact@whitebookpodcast.com. I would love to have a few more emergency hosts that are generally free on the weekday evenings, generally Tuesdays or Wednesdays, to maybe have a backup in case this happens. But as well, I would love to have some more content on the site. So been in talks with a couple people about submitting some there. It does take public submissions once you're a user, so you can write up an article and post that there. It does need approved to take a look at things to try and, you know, keep spam and such out, but check things out. I'd love to have videos or articles or anything of that nature to also keep things going. Just check that stuff out. We have had another little bit of submission to the event management system. So as well, swing on by. As you schedule up events, be they local game nights or tournaments, store championships, or whatever they might be, go ahead, hop over to the site, schedule them up so that people can find them in one centralized place and see what's going on. Hopefully, once the game is released, which unfortunately I hear maybe September at this point, people are really going to be ready to get some organized play rolling. Otherwise, props to you listeners. Thanks for sticking it out for another solo episode. If you turned this off early, I don't blame you. But hey, also, you're not hearing this anyway, so catch you later. That closes another chapter of The White Block. We'll be right back.